Today we begin lesson number 16 in our study of Mishnayos Maseches Chulin, and we will finish the fourth perek. We're up to the sixth and seventh Mishnayos of the fourth perek. The sixth Mishnah, Perek Vov, Perek Dalet Mishnah Vov, requires a bit of introduction. Doesn't every Mishnah require some introduction? This Mishnah has really two topics. The two topics are, number one, a behemoth, whose leg is cut, at what point such an animal becomes a trefa. And secondly, the din of an Eiver Meduldal, if a limb has been cut, not severed from the animal, but is kind of hanging loose from the animal's body. In the case of the first topic, behemo shenechtechu ragleho, an animal whose leg, that is hind leg, has been cut, there is a complicated machlokes about the anatomy here. I will follow one approach, and that is the approach of Rashi, and seems to be the approach of the Bartanura as well. There is another approach based on another discussion in the Gemara, which is adopted by the Rif and the Rambam, and of course which has very important halachic implications. But for studying and understanding the Mishnah, I think that Rashi's approach is certainly simpler. There are three sections to the hind legs of an animal, a cow, let's say. There's the bottommost chelek, which, as far as I can tell, having consulted various English translations of the Mishnayos and the Gemara, and found various opinions about the proper secular name from physiology, animal physiology of this bone. But as far as I can tell, it's the bone that's known as the cannon bone, and it's just above and actually connected to the animal's heel, again following Rashi. This lowermost section is called in the Gemara Arkova Hanimkeres Im Horosh, the section which is sold with the head. Some reason, when the animal was sold in the butcher shop, that bottommost bone, and let's just refer to it now as the bottommost bone, was sold together with the head and the hoofs when the animal was sold for its meat. Moving up the animal's body, there is a second bone, a long bone, the middle bone, which is called the tibia, T-I-B-I-A, or in Hebrew, that is called the shok, which is just above the knee, and then just above this lower knee, and then connects with the uppermost bone, the thigh bone. The connection of the thigh bone and the shok is what the average person would call the knee joint. So there are three sections. The lowermost, or cannon bone, is the arkova hatachtona, or the arkova hanimkeresim horosh. The middle bone, or the tibia, or the shok, is the middle section. And at the lower end of this middle section, near the knee, near the joint of the lowest bone, the cannon bone, and the tibia, are a group of sinews, of muscles, ligaments, etc., called the tzomet hagidim, kind of the terminal, the coming together of many different strands of muscle and ligament, perhaps nerves as well. This chelek, this section, is called the arkova elyona. So we have the arkova tachtona, Then we have the middle section, the Arkovo Hel Yono. And then the uppermost section is called in Hebrew the Yerech or the Kulyus. And in English, this is the thigh bone. And it ultimately connects to the famous ball and socket at the uppermost end of the thigh bone, where it is inserted into the pelvic bone. Again, this is one approach following Rashi. Now let's see the Mishnah. Behemo shenechtechu ragleho minho arkuvo ulamato, an animal whose leg was cut below the arkuvo, meaning the animal, the bone was severed somewhere in that cannon bone, and that somewhere in that lowermost section, the animal's foot was cut off. That does not render the animal a trefo. Kishero. Minho arkovo ulamato kishero. Minho arkovo ulamalo. Anything above that point where the tibia or middle bone meets the cannon bone, any cut above that point, any cut within that middle section, renders the animal trefo. Minho arkovo ulamalo, ulamalo psula. If that bunch of fibers, the meeting of the sinews, the coming together of those muscles, ligaments, nerves, etc., at the point where the cannon bone and tibia connect, if that is stripped or removed, that too makes the animal a trefa. So that's the first section of the Mishnah. And again, following the pshat of Rashi. The second part of the Mishnah introduces the concept of Ever HaMeduldal, a suspended or hanging limb. Nishbar HaEtzem, suppose a bone is broken. And the bone is broken at a point which does not render the animal trefo. For example, the bone is broken below the arkova, lower down on the hind leg. But it's broken and it is now protruding from the body. It's suspended, hanging outside the body. So it depends. Imrov habosor kayom. If the skin of the animal and the flesh around the animal cover the majority of the thickness of the height and the circumference of that protruding bone, protecting it, then shechitoso mitaharto. The animal is that ever meduldal, that suspended bone, is considered part of the animal. And when that animal is shechted, the shechita renders it kosher, and you can eat the entire animal, including that suspended bone. However, v'imlav, if the flesh and the hide of the animal do not cover most of that protruding bone, then ein shechitoso mitaharto. Then the shechita does not render that ever meduldal, that suspended limb, permissible to eat. Nevertheless, the animal is still permissible to eat because the animal is not a trefo. So that is the Mishnah simply put. Again, like often happens when one studies Mishnayos, we're avoiding many, many complexities and nuance and details which are discussed in the Gemara and which are, in our case and in many other cases, a subject of a great machlokes between the Rishonim and the Poskim. But we have followed Rashi in presenting this Mishnah Vov. Now let's move on to Mishnah Zayin, the concluding Mishnah of the fourth parak. Ashochetes habehemo. If a person shechts an animal, a cow, let's say, umotza bo, and he discovers inside the cow, after he cuts it open, shilya, not a fetus, but rather a shilya. A shilya is the sac in which a fetus develops, which is filled with a fluid known as the amniotic fluid. So this sac is technically called the amniotic sac. So there's no fetus inside because the fetus hasn't developed yet. If it's there, it's small, even microscopic, and certainly is not discernible. You don't see a inside of that sac anything resembling a calf, but because it's in the early stages of development. So can a person eat that shilya? Well, the Mishnah says it's really a matter of taste. You know the old saying, my mother-in-law, may she rest in peace, used to say it all the time, al tam v'al reyach, ein lehitvakeach. On taste and on the sense of smell, there's no arguing. I like certain things, other people don't like certain things. So here too, if you like to eat this kind of stuff, amniotic sacs, shilya, fine, it's kosher to eat. So nefesh hayofa tochlena, the beautiful nefesh, meaning a person who's not too picky, will eat that. But technically, halakhically, it is not food. It's kosher to eat, but it doesn't qualify as food. Therefore, it's not an ochel. Therefore, ve'eino mitama'o lo tumas ocholin. It can't become tome tumas ocholin. Foodstuff is susceptible to certain types of tumah. Pieces of wood are not susceptible to those types of tumah. This is nothing more than a piece of wood. It is not food. A piece of flesh. It is not food. Velo tumas nevelos. If an animal is killed, not through shechita, hit by a truck, and its carcass is now a nevela, the shilya that's found in that carcass is not mitame tumas nevela, because it's not ochel. Tumas nevela has to be edible, that is, edible foodstuff, if not edible halachically. However, suppose chishev oleho, suppose a person, this person with the nefesh yofa, decides, oh, that's shilya, there's nothing I like better than fried shilya. So he has had a machshava, an intention, to eat it. That intention renders it to a certain extent an ochel. Mitamo tumas ocholin. His machshava renders it a foodstuff, and now it is susceptible to receiving certain types of tumah. Avalo tumas nevelos. But it can never be considered a part of a nevela itself, because his machshava can take something which is not normally a foodstuff and render it a foodstuff because it has this weird sense of taste. But it cannot render it flesh. It's not flesh. It's just waste as far as we're concerned. So it cannot be a nevela, but it can be an ochel. The Mishnah continues. Shilya sheyotzeso mitzoso. Suppose this amniotic sac is protruding from the body of the mother animal before the shechita. It sometimes happens. It happens even in humans, I understand. So therefore, the shilya sheyotzeso mitzoso before the shechita, asura ba'achila, the shilya cannot be eaten. Even after you shech the mother, if the shilya was partially even, exited, left, protruded, expelled from the mother's body, even partially, the shechita will not render it kosher to eat. The reason being, because we're concerned that maybe in that shilya, in that amniotic sac, there was once, we can't see it now, but there was once the head of the fetus. If the head of the fetus exits the mother's body, exits the birth canal, it is considered born. Once it's born, it is not nitar, it did not become permissible through the shechita of its mother. The Mishnah continues, Siman Velad Ba'isha. If a shilya, a woman delivers a shilya, she expels a shilya from her body, that shilya is an indication of birth. Even though there's hardly a trace of anything inside the shilya, we have a rule that ain shilya below velad. If there is a shilya, there must have been a fetus inside at some stage of development. And if she therefore delivered, so to speak, this shilya, she is tomei, tmeya, tumas leida. It's as if she gave birth as far as the rules of tuma are concerned. Visimon vlad ba behema. And it is also an indication of birth in an animal, so that the shilya, which is delivered from the mother, even partially, if the mother is shechted, that shilya does not become kosher to eat with the shechita of the mother. The Mishnah continues, Hamavakeres, we encountered this word before. It's an animal who has never given birth before, is now pregnant for the first time. It's about to give birth, if it gives birth to a male animal, to a bechor. Shehipilo shilya, suppose it miscarried and delivered a shilya. So the shilya is its peterechem. The shilya is its first birth. What can you do with it? Does it have a rule, a din of a dead bechor, which has to be treated with certain sanctity? No. Yashlicheno laklovim, it can be thrown to the dogs. It has no kedushas bechora. I ain't shilya below vlad. Don't we have to assume that this shilya contained a fetus at some point, however undeveloped, and therefore it should have kedushas bechora? No. Because Rov Shilyos, the majority of Shilyos, true, they carry a Vlad, but they don't carry a Bechor. First of all, we figure 50-50, males versus females. Female firstborns are not Kadoshos Bekdushas Bechor, only males, so 50-50. And even in the 50% that may have been males, but the possibility is that 1%, 2% were deformed to such an extent that they would not be Kadosh Kedushas Bechor. So 50 plus some other percentage points makes it a rov that are not Kadoshos. And therefore, based on that rov, based on that majority, the odds are that it's not a Bechor, and Yashlichleno Laklovim, it can be thrown to the dogs. Uva Mikdoshin. But suppose you have an animal which has been sanctified as a korban. For example, you have a cow, a female cow, which you designated to be a shlomim. Because a korbanola can only be a male, but a shlomim could be male or female. And if this korban shlomim is pregnant and gave birth to, or miscarried, a shilya, then that shilya does have to be treated with sanctity. Tikover, it has to be buried. Because whether that shilya was a male or a female doesn't matter. Either way, it's kadoshos. Either way, the shilya is kadosha. The shilya has the sanctity of a korban and therefore cannot be thrown to the dogs, but must be buried. Then we have another interesting halacha. And if it's buried, ein kovrin osa, it cannot be buried beferoshas derochim. It cannot be buried at the crossroads because the menachashim, the people who were charmers, sorcerers, magic workers, very superstitious people, believed that if you take the shilya of an animal which miscarried this shilya and bury it at the crossroads, the next birth would be a healthy, viable birth. But we don't believe in that nonsense. So therefore, it's not proper to bury it at the Proshos Derochim. V'ein tolin osa bo'ilon. There seemed to have been another superstitious practice of suspending the shilya that was expelled in this manner from a tree. We don't believe in these things. And since we don't believe in these superstitions, it's not permissible to do it. Mipnei darchei ha'emori. The Torah said with reference to the Emori, to the pagan Gentiles, who occupied the land of Israel before the Jewish people entered, Uvichukosehem lo seilechu. You're not supposed to follow their statutes. Their statutes are nonsense, superstition, witchcraft, etc. We don't do it. So you have to bury it because the fetus or the shilya has kedushas korban. But you don't bury it by the crossroads or you don't suspend it from a tree, etc. And so we have finished the seventh Mishnah of Perek Daled. We have also now just finished Perek Daled. We finished the fourth Perek, and we have concluded lesson number 16.